Thank you, Bruce and Susan. It may be entitled a simple song, but it is a very difficult song to sing. Excellent job.
That's the juxtaposition of the whole thing.
Yes. I'm reading from the letter of James this morning. My brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it nothing but joy, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its full effect, so that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. If any of you is lacking in wisdom, ask God, who gives to all generously and ungrudgingly, and it will be given you. But ask in faith, never doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. For the doubter, being double-minded and unstable in every way, must not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Let the believer who is lowly boast in being raised up, and the rich in being brought low, because the rich will disappear like a flower in the field. For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the field. Its flower falls, and its beauty perishes. It is the same way with the rich. In the midst of a busy life, they will wither away. Blessed is anyone who endures temptation. Such a one has stood the test and will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. Amen. James, once again, I preach from that little book of practical Christianity, sort of a how-to book. In the Revised Standard Version of this, after a greeting, James begins with a shout, "Count it all joy." No hesitation here, no fumbling to get to the point, no tiptoeing around the issue. And what is the first issue James addresses? Suffering, trials, troubles, all those flies in the ointment, all those thorns in the flesh, all those knockdowns in life, all that being pushed back to the goal line and having to start again. That's where James begins. And he shouts, "Count it all joy, nothing but joy." Now I can feel you thinking and maybe saying beneath your breath, and you call this a how-to book. To call this an epistle of practical Christianity sounds rather naive. Nothing but joy. That sounds a lot more like a cloud nine approach, not a down-to-earth grappling with reality. Well, at least James gets our attention right off. Anyone who grabs our attention and looks us straight in the eye and with a steady voice hones in nothing but joy deserves to be heard a little bit at least. So let's hear what James has to say. Maybe we will hear best if we begin at the end of verse 4. That you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. Now that kind of appeals, doesn't it? I mean, isn't that what everybody who wants something from us is offering us? Everything? And don't we want it all? One of my favorite columnists used to be Russell Baker, and he began a column with these thoughts. It's all right to want it all. We have advertisements in praise of wanting it all. Why settle for less, they ask. We have television commercials in which people who have it all torment people who don't have it all by making them feel rotten about not having it all. They display their fantastic dental caps, their stunning physiques, their incredible automobiles, their beautiful lodges and oceans and mountains and cities, their ineffably tasty beer, burgers, wine, and pizza. It doesn't get any better than this, they say, which is another way of saying, we've got it all, and you don't. Accompanying that column was a cartoon, and there was a fellow carrying a placard which read, "Instant gratification isn't fast enough." And that's an easy trap to fall into, isn't it? We are tempted to want it all, and to want it now. James demands that we rethink the whole matter of having it all. He suggests we are to be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. But there's a strange twist for our jaded minds and our overindulged appetites. James connects being perfect and complete with suffering. How can that be? Count it all joy, he says. Nothing but joy when you meet with trials. And then he closes that admonition by saying that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. So what's there to learn here? Well, first, this is elementary, but we tend to forget it. Growth is not easy. Now, that sounds very simplistic. How often have we heard that? This is true of any kind of growth. It isn't easy. It's especially true of Christian growth. That's the reason why we have so few truly saintly people. And that's the reason we should be slow to judge the faith and commitment of others. So much of our growth and so much of the way we express our faith is dependent on the kind of people we are. And we are all different. There's a story of two generals during the Civil War. The pressures of battle were intense. One general noticed that the other was visibly afraid. "Sir," he said, "if I were as frightened as you are, I'd be ashamed to call myself a general in our nation's army." "Sir," the other man replied, "if you were as frightened as I am, you would have run away by now." It's impossible to know what's going on in the depths of a person's life and mind. So we need to be careful about judging others. We never know what may be going on inside, driving them to their actions and attitudes. If we're not willing to be patient with people and stick with them until they're free to share their inner struggle with us, we can at least not add to their burden by judging. Growth is not easy. And so much of our growth, so much of the way we express our faith, is dependent upon the kind of people we are, and we are different from each other. That suggests a second truth. When you are suffering, it doesn't help to compare yourself to others. More than 200 years ago, a young boy lived in England who was very sick and puny. They didn't have, of course, the medicines that we do now or the medical technology that we know. So he remained in that condition all his life, never became a physically strong person at all. When he was young, he would look out the window of his house and watch other children playing in the field. He would become sad as he watched them, even crying sometimes, because he wanted to be out there with them, but he couldn't. That made him feel sorry for himself and jealous and envious of others. When he was older, he decided that he would go into the ministry, be a pastor of a congregation, spend his life serving Christ in that way. But again, his health failed, and he was just too frail to carry on his pastoral duties. He became depressed. "Why can't I be like other people?" he would cry out. "They have their health and I don't. They can do things with their lives and I can't. They're out there making a difference and I'm just sitting here unable to make any difference at all. Why can't I be like them?" But then one day, someone talked with this young man and helped him to see that his life had its own purpose, apart from that of anyone else. He began to realize that he would get nowhere as long as he compared himself with everyone else. He began to affirm the fact that he had his own life apart from anyone else. What mattered was that he live his own life fully and completely and to the best of his ability. And when he started to do that, he began to change. And his life really began to take off. That man was Isaac Watts. one of the greatest hymn writers of all time. He wrote Joy to the World and O God, Our Help in Ages Past and others. His life had no direction, no energy, no creativity until he stopped looking around, comparing himself with others, and committed himself to living his own unique life. So if we are to learn to count it all joy, to see nothing but joy, and move through our suffering and trials to be mature and complete, lacking in nothing, we need to know that it doesn't help to compare ourselves with others. That pushes us back to a specific word suggested in our text. Suffering can be wasted, or it can produce steadfastness or endurance in faith. That's what James says. For you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. But pay careful attention to the completion of his thought. For you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its full effect, that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. You see, suffering may produce endurance and faith, and we still would be incomplete. We still may lack joy. Pain by itself is evil. It doesn't teach us anything. It may discipline us to be strong and not complain and have that stiff upper lip. It may turn us into cynics. We may be tough and steadfast in our suffering. But that's a long way from what James is talking about. Count it all joy that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. Philip Yancey, in his book, Disappointment with God, gives us a clue for allowing our steadfast faith and suffering to work to its full effect in our lives. He tells us about Douglas, who seemed righteous in the sense of Job, and who, like Job, suffered terrible afflictions he didn't deserve. Douglas had given up a lucrative career to start an urban ministry. His wife developed cancer and was struggling with the side effects of chemo. In the midst of this crisis, a drunken driver hit their car, and Douglas sustained a severe brain injury. He suffered terrible headaches and double vision. He could no longer work full-time to support his wife and daughter. He had loved to read, but he struggled to get through a page or two. If anyone had a right to be angry with God, Douglas did. Philip Yancey expected Douglas to express disappointment with God, but instead, Douglas said that he had learned not to confuse God with life. Sounds strange. Douglas said, I feel free to curse the unfairness of life and to vent all my grief and anger. But I believe God feels the same way about that accident, grieved and angry. I don't blame God for what happened. I have learned to see beyond the physical reality of this world to the spiritual reality. We tend to think life should be fair because God is. But God is not life. And if I confuse God with the physical reality of life by expecting constant good health, for example, then I set myself up for a crashing disappointment. We can learn to trust God despite all the unfairness of life. Isn't that the main point of Job? Douglas challenged Philip Yancey to go home and read again the story of Jesus. Was life fair to him? For me, the cross demolished for all time the basic assumption that life will be fair. You see the difference? It's kind of clear. We can waste our suffering or we can allow it to produce trust in God, endurance and faith. And we can allow that endurance and faith to perfect and complete us, leaving us lacking in nothing. And that will determine how we spend our dash. Our dash. Do you know what that means? Between the dates of our lives, there's a dash. There's a poem called The Dash. You may have heard it. It goes like this. I read of a reverend who stood to speak at the funeral of his friend. He referred to the dates on her tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of her birth and spoke of the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that she spent alive on earth, and now only those who loved her know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left. You might be at dash mid-range. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real, and always try to understand the way other people feel, and be less quick to anger, and show appreciation more, and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read, with your life's actions to rehash, would you be pleased with the things they say about how you spent your dash? So the shout of James is real. Nothing but joy. And we can do that. If we know that growth is not easy, if we realize when we are suffering, it doesn't help to compare ourselves with others. And if we not waste our suffering, but allow it to produce endurance and faith, that is what will bring us to completion, lacking in nothing. How will we spend our dash? Let us fill our dashes with joy. Amen.